Hey, podcast listeners, this is Michael Shelley here. We've got a big bonanza. We've got my recent talk with Lulu, and then I've tacked on the end of this a special bonus, my talk from 2009 with Lulu. So it's a giant Lulu special. Check out WFMU.org/Michael for a list of upcoming guests and, of course, the archives of all my previous guests. And now, here's Lulu.
Whatever I got, well, I know it's mine. I don't go around with a local crowd. I don't dig what's in, so I guess I'm out. I'm saying this thing so you know me, baby. So you understand what I'm all about. The boat that I row will cross the ocean. Tell me what to say. I choose my own side and I like it that way. I don't worry about all the things I'm the. There's only one thing I want, I ain't got. You know that I'm thinking about you, baby. But you better know.
Oh, man. You can't really argue with that. There's Lulu, the boat that I row, wrapping up a bunch of songs from Lulu. Lulu, I'm happy to welcome you back to WFMU. Good morning.
Good morning.
I get this idea. We've just heard a bunch of your songs, you know, and before that we heard Me, the Peaceful Heart. I have this idea that all these folks are writing songs. It's swinging 60s in London, and they're coming to you, and, you know, and people are dying to have you record their songs. Is that what it was like? Did you get to pick the songs?
No, I had no choice in picking these songs. In fact, it was a very distressful time for me because my record producer produced Herman's Hermits, and I think he saw me as Herman's Hermits, and I was definitely not that kind of singer. So the stuff that I sang, I mean, that was a Neil Diamond song, that was a good song, but I much preferred black American soul stroke R&B. Rock and roll music.
It's so funny.
So those things to me were a little lightweight.
You say
and
that.
They would come to my record producer. He was the one that would say it was a hit. And often I would be crying and saying, I don't want to sing this.
Really?
So there you go.
Really crying?
The true story.
But, you know, it's funny because I was listening to that and I was thinking, this is what makes this so great is that you're putting so much soul into these pop songs. And that is such a unique little spot to be in, you know?
Oh, well, thank you.
And who else could do? I mean, you know, what's his name? Herman, the guy from Herman's Hermits.
Peter Noon.
Peter Noon. I mean, he's a great little pop singer, but there's no way he could sing, you know, Me the Peaceful Heart like you or The Boat That I Row or these other tunes in that way, you know? That's what makes them so wonderful.
I never sing these songs. I haven't sung them for 30, 40 years.
Are you going to sing them tonight at the
BB
King's
Blues?
No way,
no.
What can
They're not the kind of stuff I'm singing. I'm singing like a Bobby Blue Bland song.
Oh, wow.
I'm singing a Freddie King song. I'll be doing Shout, which is my first hit. I'll obviously be doing To Sir With Love, but a little bit more Al Green.
Oh, awesome.
So all this, you know, the stuff that you've been playing, I don't do anymore. It's because I originally, when I was a child, was so influenced by American, as I said before, black American soul stroke R&B music, that I, when I went with producers and they looked at me, they would say I was cute because I was small. But they really didn't know what to do with me. So it's been a very interesting journey, let me tell you. So now I'm thrilled. That's why I'm thrilled to be at BB King. I get to get back to my roots.
You've never, is this correct, you've never played in New York City before?
I've done private things, but I've never really did a lot of gigs in America.
It's absolutely amazing. You sort of have...
It's crazy, isn't it?
It is crazy. I mean, it's amazing. Dick Clark never had you in one of his, you know, tours or something.
No, but I did some TV with him.
What was
I had this... Well, you know, and I think it basically, it's because I was a teenager. I had my own Saturday night primetime television show. I had become a success at the age of 15. My manager was an older woman who was extremely wealthy, had three kids at the French Lycée-Français school, and a husband, and she wasn't ready to pick up and move to America or spend a lot of time here. My parents were in Scotland, so I didn't make the move. I mean, some say, and I have some regret, you know, but I try not to sit in a world of regret, but, you know, I should have moved here.
Hmm.
Because of the influence of American music. I mean, my parents wouldn't even watch English films. Or British films. I never liked any British acts until the Beatles. But you see, they were influenced by the same music as me.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. The Beatles had a great record collection, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me just spell it out for folks. It's your first show in New York City. It's tonight at BB King's, West 42nd Street. And for folks who live in New Jersey, it's about the closest rock and roll venue to the Port Authority bus terminal. It's really easy to get there. And you're playing with an all-star band. It's basically
amazing. Yeah, Paul Schaefer, Jimmy Vivino, who's in the Conan. He's on Conan every night. Will Lee, who's on with Paul Schaefer every night with Letterman, and Rich Pagano. And I have four fantastic backing singers who just take it to church.
It sounds like
we're
going
to rock the place out. Let me tell you.
Have you been?
We were rehearsing till 12:30 last night.
Is it fun? Is it still a kick?
Oh, this is what I live for. You know, I didn't decide when I was a young person that I wanted to be famous or anything. You know, who knew that this, what happened to me was going to happen? I really just want to sing because music is my first love. It will be my last. And that's really what it's all about. So I want to sing until I drop. And I also, I'm in America more now because I'm on QVC because I'm in partnership with the co-founder of the John Frieda Hair Products. And with that whole team now make a skincare line with me. And I'm on QVC from March the 27th. So I'm going to be here doing that. And I want to do more clubs. So it's kind of fantastic. I'm 64. It's amazing.
You are, you know, you do the skincare, you do acting, you do hosting duties, you do singing, you do writing for yourself and other folks. Are you, I mean, and I mean this in the nicest way, are you a crazy person? You know?
Yeah.
Okay.
In a word.
We got that out of the way.
And I have two grandchildren who I'm also crazy about. So, I'll be popping back and forth and back and forth over the pond. But, yeah, you mentioned songwriting. It was also another amazing thing. You know, to be in a film with Sidney Poitier and have that success, but to have Tina Turner record a song, the first song I ever wrote, I Don't Want to Fight, was also amazing. I think I had angels on my shoulders.
I think your father was a butcher. You grew up in Glasgow. Was there ever a time where folks from back home thought you got too big for your britches?
Probably. But mostly they were thrilled that I was came from a very working class background and went out there and sort of made my mark. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, people like Sean Connery, you know, always are. I was like the little girl who did good, you know. There were always people who were Scottish, like Jack Bruce from Cream, you know, they just are so thrilled for me.
I don't know if you know the Glaswegian band Bell and Sebastian.
No, I don't.
Terrific band. Huge band now. And Stevie, the singer of that, saw my post on Facebook that you were going to be on, and he said, oh, Lulu, best Scottish singer ever, you know?
So, oh, my goodness. So that is too sweet.
The younger generation.
I'm going to write that name down. I got to Google them.
I think you'll love them, Bell and Sebastian.
And what kind of style of music?
Contemporary song music.
Pop music.
Pop music, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Glaswegian pop music. I think you'll like it. Let's talk about money. Everyone always wants to, all the listeners want to hear about money. All the guests don't want to really talk about it. But
what do you mean they want to hear about money? It's a money program?
Whenever I ask about show business and money and how much money people have made, the guests always love those kinds of questions. People, you know,
but people don't actually, aren't gross enough to discuss exactly what they make,
no,
are they?
No, never. But,
That's
no.
Disgusting.
Yeah, I agree. But here's what I want to know. If somebody uses a Lulu's 60s track in a car commercial, do you see money from that? Or are...
Oh, you're talking about how the... Well, you know, if I've written the song, I would make it from PRS, from, you
right.
know, the writing. My publishers would get money. If I haven't written it and it was from the 60s, probably not a cent. Because the deals that were made in the 60s kind of were not renewed after about 20 or 30 years. I've been around for so long. I've been around nearly 50 years.
Yeah, you started very, very... I mean, it is amazing, though, that someone can put To Serve With Love in a car commercial and you don't see 1 cent. Isn't that kind of... I mean, it's not worth driving yourself crazy for, I suppose, but it is worth getting your back up a little.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, but you know, I accept that. I mean, if I would have had the business acumen when I was a teenager to know, or the foresight to know that I was going to be still, you know, around when I was 64. I mean, I always hoped I would last forever, but I think when I was 15, I couldn't think any further than the next year. and certainly, it wasn't that I was a businesswoman then. I've become a businesswoman. But, and you know, the laws were different. The contracts were, you know, all people have readdressed those issues as the years have gone by.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. 1969, you made the record New Roots in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. And, you know, that was the place to be at that moment. You know, you were in the place with, you know, Roger Hawkins and Dwayne Allman and all those guys and Jerry Wexler.
Right.
Was that a good experience for you? Was that a fish-out-of-water experience?
Oh, my God, it was unbelievable. Because those are the, you know, if I think about it, the second song in my show tonight is... Solomon Burke, Cry to Me.
Mm.
Now, the guy who wrote that was called, his name was Burt Burns. Burt Burns wrote also Twist and Shout, among many, many, many other songs. I worked for Janis Joplin, and he recorded The Drifters, but he worked with Tom Dowd, Arif Mardin, and Jerry Wexler. I got to go with these guys who I had worshipped because of the records they made. That was the kind of music I liked. And, you know, bless Herman's Hermits. I'm not putting him down, but it's just... You know, the style of music wasn't the thing that I was into doing, and it didn't sit with my kind of voice. But all the stuff they did on Atlantic Records, was starting with Ray Charles, was absolutely who I worshipped. So when I went to work with these guys, it wasn't so much a fish out of water. I was so overly excited. But, you know, interestingly enough, the only song that was a hit from the first album I brought with me from Glasgow. It was called Oh Me Oh My. And that was like a little bit of Glaswegian soul all the way down to Muscle Shoals. So it's, you know, it's really, and Aretha said that she loved that song so much. She said it was one of her favorite songs. And she said, I will tell you why one day, but she never did.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to have to sit down and have that conversation with her.
It's not too
late. And
then
Michael McDonald, much later on, I was doing a tribute in New York to Whitney Houston, and he said to the producers of the show, can I sing a duet with Lulu? And I was like, oh my goodness, Michael McDonald wants to sing with me. That's insane. And he said, but I want it to be Oh Me Oh My. So it was an amazing, I mean, I had Jerry, Tom, and Arif. Jerry produced Aretha. I mean, they all got involved in it. Tom, who was he? The Bee Gees, the Clapton, Arif. Oh, my God. He did all the string and arrangements for all the stuff, the Young Rascals. I mean, I can't even think of how many people. The Drifters, you know, Benny King. They all worked on those albums.
So you walk in the door, and is there a feeling out period? Do those guys kind of wait for you to open your mouth and sing before they...
No, they decided I should be on. I got away from the guy, Mickey Most, who made me record all the rinky-dink stuff that I wasn't happy with. I bless Mickey. I mean, I had a lot of hits, but they were not... It wasn't like this. I'm singing from my soul. It's like I'm singing da 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 da. You know, it was like lightweight stuff, and I wanted it to be more gritty and more.
Yeah, well, all seven of your Mickey Most records made the charts. All seven of your singles.
Right. So you really, I shouldn't be complaining, but I don't sing any of them anymore.
All right.
I mean, he didn't even want to do "To Sir With Love." He didn't like it, and he wouldn't put it on the A side. Which was, you know, you had vinyl in those days, you had a 45. So what happened was that the disc jockeys in America turned it over and made it a hit.
Yeah, it was a huge hit here. Let's talk about Las Vegas. 1969, you did your thing at the Flamingo Hotel in Las Vegas. Once again, you're kind of in the exact right place at the right time. What was that whole scene like? I mean, I can't even imagine what that's
one
like.
One thing I remember was Tom Jones calling and saying, come meet me at Caesar's Palace. And I was married to Morris Gibb, you know, the Bee Gees.
Sure.
So Morris and I walked across from, where was I, the ambassador? I think I was with Ray Stevens, and we were doing a show there. And I walked over to meet Tom Jones at Caesar's Palace, and he was sitting with Frank Sinatra. Back it. And Morris and I, we were like 19, whatever, you know, 20. I was, oh my goodness. And he was so nice. He was so nice.
Did were you on Frank Sinatra's radar? He must have known some of your records, yeah?
I mean, we didn't discuss my career. You know, although he did say to me, do you warm up your voice before you go on? And I said, no, I don't. He said, you should. I'll teach you. And I never followed him.
Wow.
Follow that up.
That is amazing.
Shy with him, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm not sure I want to be in, if I'm a 19-year-old girl, I don't want to be in a room, you know, having Frank Sinatra.
Well, I don't think he was lascivious or in any, you know, way... sort of, you know, he wasn't like that with me. He was kind of just very friendly, and I was with my husband, you know, so he was very nice. He had a very attractive girlfriend. She was Chinese or something at the time.
In the year 2000, you got the OBE from the Queen. Of course, in America, I'm not even sure what the OBE is exactly.
Well, you know, I'm British, and I'm not exactly sure. It is an honor.
It's an honor. Is that the thing John Lennon sent
OBE,
back?
OBE, I think, stands for the Order of the British Empire. Now, what that means exactly... I'm not sure, but it's an honor. And it's not like I walk around with a big sort of medal on my shoulder. It's just something that I think is unbelievably unreal, you know.
It doesn't give you a discount at the cinema or anything. There's no... it's been an amazing career, and it continues, you know, forever. I was watching a clip on YouTube of American Idol, and... you know, people just kind of going crazy. And I noticed that you were singing "To Sir With Love," but you don't quite sing it exactly the same. You sing it a little bit more like a 63-year-old lady, which I think is kind of appropriate. You know, you're not wearing...
I sang it like a 63-year-old lady. You want me to knock your block off?
Well,
that is not a nice thing to say.
Yeah, yes, it is. I mean it...
Oh, my God.
Lulu, no, I mean...
I mean that old lady.
No, I mean that you didn't...
Actually, the point
was
to not... sing it at my age as if I was an ingenue.
Exactly.
Like a 15 or 16 year old. It was to do it also to fit more that lineup of the band. And so I had been watching American Idol, and I had seen Rod Stewart on 1 week. I saw Barry Manilow on another week, and I thought how brilliant they were on the show. And Barry had written all the arrangements for every song that the contestants sang. So a friend of mine said to me, what you need is... I said, I can't do it the same way. Those schoolgirl days of telling tales. It needed a kick. So she said, you need a Barry. And I said, a Barry? What do you mean? So it was... She said, a Barry Manilow. She meant Barry Manilow. So I called Barry Manilow, who is one of the nicest people in the world. And I said, would you consider... doing an arrangement for me for that? He said, I would love to. And that's how it happened. So if anyone listens to it, you can hear it just kind of has a powerful key change at the end, so that I can reach for big notes and kind of belt it out.
It's amazing. Tonight, Lulu will be at B.B. King's Blues Club on West 42nd Street, right in Times Square in New York City. LuluOfficial.com is her website.
Is it LuluOfficial.com that they should look at, Gail?
What? Let's ask Gail.
Okay. Yes, it is.
That works
for you? Websites out. Some are not great, but that one's okay.
The show's tonight at 8 o'clock, and I do urge...
8 o'clock, and I believe it's sold out.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you.
But it's that, you know... I just hope that will lead to me doing some more shows here.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know people are very excited, and it doesn't happen often, and hopefully it will happen. Maybe we can get you in here with a guitar.
In the studio.
I would love to hear you.
You know I never shut up. You'll never get rid of me.
Well, perhaps you can sing a bit in the morning.
I'll be talking your head off.
I love that. There's so many stories. It's great. We haven't talked about, there's a million things we haven't talked about, but I guess it's to be continued. Lulu, I know you're not going to be happy with this, but I've got, I'm trying to think what pop record you hate I should play next.
Why would you want to play one I hate? Why didn't you play one I like?
I just didn't bring it in, but I wasn't sure. I didn't know you really felt this aversion to that early period.
Meet a Peaceful Heart doesn't mean a thing to me.
Hmm.
Boy doesn't mean a thing. If people like it, that's fine, but I certainly, at this point in my life, don't feel that I have to do what a producer tells me to do.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of what I feel and what I love. That's what I'm doing. So, what song would you play?
Well, I was going to either play I'll Come Running, which is my all-time...
I'll Come Running is fabulous. That one I did with Burt Burns.
Oh, finally.
I was 15 years old, and I recorded with Burt Burns. He's the guy I mentioned.
Yeah, sure.
Who wrote Twist and Shout, Cry to Me, which I'm doing tonight, the Solomon Burke.
Yeah, I think he wrote Get It While You Can.
Get It While You Can, I don't remember.
That song that...
But the I'll Come Running Over was, in fact, that when I met the Bee Gees, the first time I met them, they said that was a hit in Australia.
Hmm.
But that's so... I love that. Play that one.
I'm going to. Tell me, who's playing the guitar on this track?
Jimmy Page.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Led Zeppelin.
He's out of his mind, right? It's just completely over the top. It's amazing.
Well, not now. It sounds a bit tame, I think.
No.
Don't you?
No, I think it is... It is. Oh, this guy is going for it completely. I'm sure he had to lie down after the take was completed. And you too. It's kind of, you know, the whole thing is everybody's just boiling up together. It's boiling hot.
Well, it was kind of, it was sweet, very sweet, trying to get that sort of sound that Burt worked with, because he also produced Van Morrison when he was with his band Them. So he did Van Morrison and he did me. I don't know if he did anybody else. But that was a great experience. And I loved everything he wrote, and he's singing with me on it. I think it was who originally did that I'll Come Running Over? Rufus and his daughter Irma. Rufus, I can't remember.
Rufus Thomas?
Yeah, Rufus Thomas and Irma Thomas.
No.
Yeah, they did the original version, I think.
They did. All right.
Now, that's me and Burt. But another song that's really a favorite of mine, a lot of people ask why I don't do it, is something I wrote with my brother called Where the Poor Boys Dance. So maybe one day you get a chance to play that. Maybe when I come in.
That sounds great. I'll be in touch. And meanwhile, tonight at B.B. King's Club, perhaps there's standing room or a way you can give them a call, 212-997-4144, and see if it's truly, truly sold out. Perhaps we can...
Yeah, maybe some cancellations. You never know.
Squeeze. It's New York. Yes. Anything.
Yes. How great.
For $20 in the palm of the hand, you know, it's a front row seat. B.B. King's tonight, Lulu, and check out luluofficial.com. Lulu, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Have a great...
I'll speak to you and see you soon.
I hope so.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, there's Lulu. I'll come running over. They just don't make records like that anymore, folks. I don't know why. It doesn't get better than that. I guarantee you that. Folks, joining us on the telephone, it's my pleasure to welcome Lulu to the program. Well, hi.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm fantastic. What a great record that is. Boy, that just jumps off the turntable. I mean, that's fantastic.
I haven't heard it for at least 30 years.
No. I listen to it often, and I turn it high up and annoy my neighbors. That's...
You know who was on the album. You know who was on the track.
Well, I've got a feeling, but what will you tell us?
Yeah, I'd like to tell you. It was, first of all, it was Jimmy Page playing guitar.
Amazing.
From Led Zeppelin. And that little sound that he made, that kind of little rough sound, was the first time he'd ever used a contraption called the fuzz box. And we were all absolutely agog. We were, whoa, Jimmy, wow, what a sound. Now, of course, it's just, you know.
Right,
doesn't even make an impact. And Burt Burns produced it. Burt Burns was with Atlantic.
American guy, right?
Oh, yeah. Burt came over to London and worked with myself and Jimmy. And then he worked with a guy called Mike Leander, who then he brought Jimmy and Mike Leander back to New York. And they worked on a lot of big hit records on Atlantic. Mike Leander did like work, you know, all the Drifters, all the string arrangements on the Drifters, our tracks, Mike arranged, you know, all those beautiful songs like Under the Boardwalk. And Burt Burns himself wrote Hang On Sloopy and Twist and Shout and produced, he wrote, Didn't I Make You Feel Like You Were the Only Man? What's that called again?
A Piece of My Heart.
Huh?
Piece of My Heart.
Yeah, he wrote that as well.
Yeah. People forget that guys like Jimmy Page were session guys, you know, just young guys, played guitar on scores of records.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was very young then, of course, and he wasn't in a band at that point.
Now, speaking of young, you grew up in Glasgow. Your dad was a butcher. And when did you start singing?
Well, my mother said I could sing before I could talk, but, you know, mothers always exaggerate. But I definitely was singing that. As soon as I could speak, I was singing.
And when were you singing in front of strangers?
Oh, in front of... Well, in Glasgow, you don't have parties and stand around with drinks in your hand. I mean, they drink, but everybody has to sing. It's a bit like all Celts do it, the Welsh do it, the Irish do it. You know, they have a party and everybody has to sing a song. Come on, sing your favorite, give us your best, you know, and everyone would do their turn. And so I sang as soon as... there was a party, I'd be 2 or 3 years old. People would put me up on the table, and I'd stand there singing.
Mm. And so you're a kid in the late 50s, the early 60s, and the sort of post-war baby boom thing is happening. You know, the kids need something to do, and there's music in pubs, there's music and there's dances
everywhere. In the streets, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit like the films that I would watch of America, because my mother was obsessed with America. And never watched an English movie, ever, a British movie. She hated them. She thought they were rubbish. So we would watch American movies. And anything that was American, we were all enamored of. And that's why when I sang with an American accent. And you'd watch, going back to people singing in different areas in their homes, I would watch, in America, they'd sing on the stoop. Do you call it the stoop?
Mm-hmm, sure.
And they'd do the barbershop harmonies, or, you know, it would be... like that soulful that black kids would sing, you know, in the streets. It was very similar in Glasgow.
Glasgow sort of has a reputation as one of the really toughest places. You know, it's a kind of a shipping town. I've been there a bunch of time. It's a great place to go.
Same with Liverpool.
Yeah, right, exactly. But was it a tough place to grow up?
Yeah, it was pretty scary. I mean, as a child, you know, it wasn't a case of being articulate and well-educated and civil. It was a case of you just reacted physically. Don't talk to me like that and you'd hit somebody, you know?
Yeah, I always feel when I'm there, there's no chance you're going to be shot and killed like in New York City, but there's a good chance someone's going to break a pint glass over your head, you know?
That yes, could, absolutely.
Could happen but at any
moment.
But at
the same time, you know, the thing is that I think, you know, they're very passionate and very warm. In fact, Scottish people are very warm. They're often talked about as being dour. Of course, we call that dour. The dour, but it's just on the outside. It's the exterior. On the inside, we're really soft as putty.
Sounds like New Yorkers.
I feel very, very, very similar to that. I mean, that's exactly what I think. And that's why when I come here, because I'm here right now, I feel so much at home.
At age 14, you're playing with a group called the Glen Eagles.
Yes.
And how often did you guys play?
Every weekend.
So did you cut your chops, sort of? Was that your school?
Well, you know, very, very young. I mean, earlier than that, I used to sing with an accordion band. And I would go up for competitions when we'd go on holiday. And weirdly enough, I would kind of mostly win them because, you know, I was always short. I am very small. I'm 5'1". And my voice was always big. So I think there was a novelty about that. And people could not believe the sound that a little kid made. So very often I'd win competitions. And then I went to work with an accordion band for like a year or two. I'd go to do Sunday concerts. I just couldn't sing enough. I loved it. When my parents had parties and they put me to bed, I'd knock on the door and say, "Can I sing?" And in the school, I used to sing in the playground for the older girls.
And so by the time you were playing in clubs, was it just covers of current rock and roll hits?
Oh, definitely. I didn't write any of my own songs. It was current rock and roll, but it was a lot of R&B. Like, for instance, I used to absolutely, my favorite was, you know, adored Ray Charles. And I used to love when he sang with Betty Carter or the Raylettes. And then, of course, Ike and Tina. I loved Brenda Lee, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities in her story and yours,
Like, kind of, what is that called? I don't know what that quality is. I suppose it's a big voice, I suppose, and it's got an edge to it, like it's a little bit...
Certainly great example there on I'll Come Running Over. You're just, you know, it's coming from deep within you, I think.
Well, yeah, and, you know, working with Burt Burns, because I think he wanted me to do... who did he want me to sing, do songs? I can't remember. He was all sorts of great tracks he'd bring to. And he wrote that. I think he wrote that one for me.
Fantastic.
Or somebody else did it. See, I'm hopeless. I haven't got such a great memory. But somebody else did that with her father. And that's why he's on that. He's on that track singing with me.
How did you get signed to a record contract? How did you go from 14-year-old girl in Glasgow pub to...
Oh, well, everyone was looking for talent because of the Beatles.
Hmm.
Everybody was looking for talent, so every single newspaper was, you know, doing some sort of search, and all the record companies were sending their scouts out, and at that point, I was singing in a very, very popular club at the weekends in Glasgow, and because I used to jive as well, and it was a dance club, and my band and I, because it was then that they were called the Glen Eagles. The Daily Express, which is a national newspaper, had a search for talent. And, you know, they said whoever would win this, I think it was another competition, whoever would win it would get a contract with a big record company. Of course, I was one of the winners. Hmm. I think I won it or I came in second or something.
1964, huge hit with Shout, your version of Shout.
That was really the essence of me. That was really who I was because I was crazy about the Isley Brothers.
Hmm. Yeah, and it's a great version of that song. And there's nothing... you know, girlish or English or white about it. It's just a great, great record, you know?
Well, you know, the cute story is that there was a big TV show called Ready, Steady, Go.
Mm.
And, I mean, the whole of the UK would shut down shop. Everybody would be indoors watching, I suppose, a bit like the Ed Sullivan Show in those days.
Mm.
Everybody would be home.
Right.
So when the record actually came out, because I got the contract and... I recorded the song that I sang at the audition, which was a bit disappointing for me, because I thought they'd get me a song written by the Beatles or something. I mean, I was, after all, only 14, so I was a bit naive. But anyway, they said, no, we want you to record the song that you sang at the audition, which was Shout. So when I'd finished it and it come out as a single, Paul and John were on, Paul McCartney, John Lennon, were on Ready, Steady, Go by themselves, just chatting away to the host of the show. And she said, what is your favorite release this week? And they said, Shout by Lulu. So I
you could have retired happy at that point.
I nearly
yeah.
died.
I'll bet you did, yeah. You were voted in 65 Britain's Most Promising Newcomer in Show Business by Melody Maker. And your career has just sort of gone straight up. There's no such thing as a Lulu comeback, as I'm reading through this long history, because you've never stopped. That's kind of one of the most amazing things about you.
Well, I suppose I just, you know, I do this because I love it. I never decided to sing because I wanted to be famous, which is something I think I hear just all too often these days. And I think, how weird it is. Because I would sing if I was paid. I would sing if I wasn't paid. So there's no way I'm ever going to stop. So I have never stopped, really.
Now, your first few singles are credited to Lulu and the Louvers.
Lovers.
It's pronounced Lovers?
Lovers, yeah, okay. Yes. I know it's a weird spelling. That's
yes,
why.
It is.
It's Lulu and the L-U-V-V-E-R-S.
Did they play on the records? Was there really
such... They played as well as other musicians.
Okay. I just wanted to clear that up. You finally sort of, and also one other thing, Billy Bremner, one of my favorite guitar players, was he in the Lovers? Do you remember?
No.
Okay.
Billy Bremner, no.
All right. There's, it's, you know, the internet is, there's
know,
all kinds of
I know. I do know.
You toured Poland with the Hollies, back
yeah.
in 66. That's, I think, the first female to go behind the Iron Curtain and play. What was that like?
Yeah, I think the Hollies and I were the first ever to go. It was scary because it was kind of pretty devastated, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And it was very gray, and the people were, you know, depressed.
And
it was
what was their reaction to rock and roll?
They went mad. They loved it. So it sort of, even though it was fascinating to be there and kind of scary for a 16-year-old girl, to see all that, you know, close at hand, you know, the bullets and the devastation of the buildings and the, you know, the sort of the downcast. It was like a downcast country. But at the same time, because of the reaction, it was thrilling.
Yeah. 66, you mentioned the Ed Sullivan Show, David Faraw Show, Johnny Carson Show. You're a little kid from Glasgow still. I mean, this is the big time. Was it just natural for you? Was it easy?
Well, the woman who was my manager said I took to it like a fish to water, or a duck to water, I can't remember. Fish to water.
Either one works, that's fine.
Or it was like water off a duck's back. I went, anyway, she used a couple of phrases that, and I think I did, but believe me, it was still kind of quite, I don't know, it was...
Mind-blowing?
Frightening and exciting and mind-blowing, yeah, because, you know, the first thing, I had a couple of hit records before I did To Sir With Love and before I came to America. So I was thrown in at the deep end, and I'd find myself, you know, like doing concerts with the Rolling Stones and working with the Beatles and hanging out with them all at clubs and things like that after the gigs. And during, you know, when we were traveling around the country, we'd all meet up in there's certain cafes on the off the motorway where all the bands would meet, you know, and I'd hang out with the Animals and the Who. I mean, I worked with the Who before they were the Who. They were called the High Numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I was completely thrown in at the deep end. But as I said before, my main objective was just to sing. So I think that's what kept me, my head, you know, and I come from a very, I don't know, down-to-earth kind of, I have a very down-to-earth background. So I was very fortunate that I didn't go off the deep end.
Didn't lose your head. You switched from Decca to Columbia, from Burt Burns to Mickey Most producing your record. Mickey Most produced The Animals, Donovan, Herman Hermits, a lot of great records. What was it like? What was he like?
Mickey. Well, Mickey was like a hit factory. He just everything he touched was a hit. And I actually found it difficult sometimes because I really didn't want to sing those rinky-dink songs like. I had hits with songs called, I mean, what were they? I try to forget them because it was painful in some ways. Even though I was having
really?
Hits, I didn't really like the song.
Yeah, I think the first six or seven singles Mickey Most did on you all were hits in the UK. I mean,
yeah,
every one of them.
They were, in my opinion, because I had was very opinionated, they were rinky-dink and really sissy. You know what sissy means?
Yes.
Girly, very girly. And I really prefer to sing songs that were more like a guy.
That's interesting. We heard Me the Peaceful Heart, written by Tony Hazard. I love that song. Tony was a guest on this program. Was that song written just for you?
I don't think so. I don't remember.
Mm.
It may have been, because, you know, when you're popular and selling records, everybody wants to work with you. Today, it's the same with producers. You know, all the producers want to work with the people who are selling the records.
Why
because
not?
They want to make money. They want to be famous.
Sure.
So, and now, really, it's more about the producers than it's about the acts, to be honest with you. But then it was the songwriters trying to write for the singers who were selling records. So it could have been.
There's this great idea that there were these great songwriters, guys like Tony Hazard, who were expressing the feelings of your generation.
Of the 60s, yeah.
Yeah. In a way, almost, that didn't really happen in America in quite the same concise way. Guys like Ray Davies, guys like that. Is that a real thing?
I don't know. You see, I think maybe that it was, you know, because the focus was on the UK really at that point, I think, for the first time ever. But, you know, I think people were emerging. A lot of talent was emerging.
Yeah.
But I think after I started, it became really the age of the singer-songwriter. And I really didn't start writing songs till much, much, much later, which is something I suppose I should have addressed. So at that point, a lot of singers were getting songs from songwriters, and that's doesn't happen so much these days, you know?
Mm.
It was a very interesting time, and there were a lot of really good writers around.
Yeah, it really was. Just, you know, it's so rare to see great song, great band, great production, great singer, you know.
But I always preferred American music, I'm sorry.
On those records, are you singing live with the band?
Yes. There was no going in, and there was no comping vocals like they do today. You know what comping vocals are?
Well, you sing the song 50 times, and they cut the best syllables out of each one.
They can do, which is really, for someone like me, sometimes it's good, but you want to get the essence of the song.
A performance.
I mean, actually, in movies, they do that, too. In movies, they'll take a shot, they'll do a scene straight through, and then they will cut in and have close-ups and, you know, edit them together. So it's technically a brilliant way to go about it. But for me, I like to lay down the whole track, and I like to get to know the song. Because if you don't do it then, you have to do it later, because you're going to go on stage and perform it.
Yeah. Yeah, records that feel like a performance always are the most moving, I think.
Yeah, but then again, you know, technically there's so many genius things you can do with sound today, and layering and, you know, oh my God, EQing. There's so many things that are brilliant to do to records today that make the sound extraordinary. That, you know, of course, a little bit of the old and a little bit of the new is always the best way.
Yeah, too many people using that as a crutch, sort of. You know, you don't actually need to.
That's always been the case.
Yeah, I guess so. There's always tricks. You talked about films. Let's talk about To Serve With Love, 1967. How did they say we want you to be in this film. Did you have to audition?
No, I didn't. I'll tell you what was happening. I had a song called Leave a Little Love. It was in the top 10, I think, in England. It was a ballad. And because before that, I wasn't really known as a ballad singer. But I was on tour with the Beach Boys. They were number one with Good Vibrations, I think, at the time. And it was like the Beach Boys and Lulu. The director, James Clavell, was looking for, you know, lots of young kids to be in the film. And somebody I knew told the casting director, anyway, James Clavell came to a concert, and he came backstage and he met me, and he was very, I don't know, he had a certain attitude with me, and I really didn't care about him or his film.
Hmm.
I was not desperate to be in a movie, and I wasn't desperate to be an actress, so I had a certain attitude too. And I think he said something like, you know, of course you'll have to change the color of your hair, which was bright red. And I said, if you want me in your film, you'll have me the way I am. You know, like, I'm not desperate to change to be in your film, so I'm not desperate to change the color of my hair. You know, I wasn't the typical actress type. Yes, okay, whatever you say, I'll do it. I suppose an actress will change. I wasn't, you know, anyway, I was very naive. But I had the right reaction, and he laughed. And that's the sort of part I sort of played in
right.
the film.
It's a very interesting movie. Sidney Poitier, of course, must have been awesome.
Oh, that was terrifying. First of all, Sidney's 6 foot, I don't know what. So just to stand and look up to him, you feel it's daunting, you know. Mm. And then, of course, I was not an actress, and all the other kids from in the film came from acting schools, stage schools and stuff like that. And I spoke with a thick Scottish accent, and they all had English accents. And nobody suggested that I change my accent, but I decided I didn't want to be different from the other kids. So he kept us there for a few days before on the set, before we actually had a scene. And within those two or three days, I had got the Cockney accent off pat because I did not want to be different. So I talked like that, you know, I said, hello, how are you? When in fact, I really used to talk like that with a very, but thank God I have got an ear for accents, so.
The song, of course, was a giant hit in the United States. Perhaps your most well-known song over here, To Serve with Love, it's just a great classic song. Yet in the UK, it wasn't even released as a single. Why is that?
Well, that was one of the fights I had with Mickey. I mean, I used to argue with Mickey a lot. I mean, I used to beg him, actually, not even argue with him. I used to plead with him to let me do the sort of songs I liked. And then when I got the part in the film, I said, you know, we are going to do... they want me to do the title song, so we have to get a song written. And really, the songs that came up were so desperately awful, in my opinion, and I was always in tears about it. It seemed like I was always crying, you know? And then I finally asked a friend of mine to write a song, and he said, they'll never use it. I said, write something. So I stood around with him, and I suppose really I should have gotten involved in the writing of, I should have gotten a credit for it. But, you know, I was a bit naive, as I said then. So he wrote this melody. We called up a lyricist. We got a lyricist written. Don Black, the brilliant lyricist, took it to the film company. They were happy. They didn't care. They really didn't care. And so I took charge of it as I was going to sing it. And then Mickey didn't like it very much. We did it. And he wouldn't put it on what was then called the A-side, because in vinyl, 45... RPM, the vinyl records that you got, you had an A-side and the other side was a B-side. He put it on the B-side and would not release it as an A-side, either in America or in England. But thank God and God bless the American DJs, they turned it over here.
Yeah, I think it was the B-side of Let's Pretend.
That's right. But here, the DJs wouldn't play Let's Pretend. They just played To Serve With Love and it went to number one.
Mickey, really,
he didn't think it was very good. He wasn't... He might have been a big hit maker, but somehow with me, he didn't get the essence of me, I didn't think. I mean, I love Mickey. It's not that, you know, we didn't like each other. We just disagreed artistically. And, you know, things like Let's Pretend were okay, and The Boat That I Row was okay, and all the other songs were okay. But I want to do Walk Me Out in the Morning, Do My Honey. But he wanted me to sing rinky-dink little songs like, Boy, I want to have you standing by me, boy. That's how he saw me, I think, because I was small and people would say I was cute.
Interesting.
And I really listened to Christina Aguilera tell a sort of similar story. She wanted to do the stuff she wanted to do, and record companies want you to do often what they want you to do. But I didn't take charge of that then.
Yeah.
Thing, huh? But I mean, I can't complain because I had success, but I think in some ways people just didn't get my voice. They didn't marry my voice with the way I looked and my personality.
It's interesting. Lots and lots of television, really from the mid-60s. Currently, you've just been a fixture on UK television. Tours of nightclubs, which is a scene that sort of doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, yeah, I did that for about 10 years, I think.
You know, Miami, there was all these clubs, and Hollywood, the Coconut Grove, places like that. I mean, that must have been a riot.
Oh, that? Well, that was the first time I'd ever done a nightclub in the Coconut Grove. I'd never been in a nightclub. It was always just like teenage clubs I'd worked in. Or actually, when I was very, very young, I used to work at the American bases outside Glasgow. And, of course, I felt very comfortable there because, you know, they liked the kind of music I liked. And we sang all the sort of American hits more than the British hits, you know, me and my band.
Recently, I think it was last November, a Best of Your ATCO recordings just came out. This is stuff you made 1969 to 1972,
yeah.
Mostly recorded in America, real change of direction, a lot of stuff recorded in Muscle Shoals, working with that crew down there, including Dwayne Allman on guitar and, you know, Roger Hawkins, all those guys. What was that? Another sort of mind.
What happened was I was with Mickey for 3 years and we had tremendous success, but I told you, you know, even though those hit songs were hits, I wasn't comfortable with a lot of them. So, Atlantic Records asked me, I mean, I went to Muscle Shoals to work with Jerry Wexler, Tom Dowd, and Arif Mardin.
Right.
The three of them produced my album. And to be fair, too, I don't really think they got me either. It was like there was a mishmash of songs. And I was so overwhelmed to be working with such geniuses.
Yeah, the new Roots album, it's a very interesting album. And those three guys really all were, you know, crazy geniuses and made some great records.
They were. But I think when I went with them, to be absolutely honest with you, I don't think they got me either. I mean, this sounds like I'm complaining all the time. But I love the experience. I just love the experience and the musicians I worked with. I mean, we then went on to work with the Dixie Flyers. No, the Dixie Flyers were Muscle Shoals, right?
Right, those were those guys. Then you went down to Florida.
Then I went to Miami, and the Young Rascals did all the backing vocals for me.
Hmm.
But I took a song with me that was written by a young Scottish guy from my hometown called Oh Me Oh My. And that was the one song that was a hit off that New Roots album.
Let's go ahead to 1974. Of course, Man with the Golden Gun. That puts you in a sort of a long chain of great, you know, title songs for Bond movies. Mm-hmm. Must have been a big thrill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
And then David Bowie produces a couple songs on you.
Yeah.
And there's rumors you and Bowie are an item. You and Bowie aren't an item. Clear it up for me, please.
No.
Okay, fair enough. That's all I can do. You've been a DJ on the radio, too. What is
it? Well, you know, all through my career, I mean, I actually had a television series. I hosted my own TV series for, I don't even know, 12 of them, from the age of 17. So I was on TV practically from the day I landed in England. And then, several times, I mean, I have actually had a show of my own. I'm not a real DJ. Don't get me, you know, wrong. I could go on and play songs that I love. That's what I used to do. Mm-hmm. I did it for Capital Radio, and I did it for Radio 2 for several years. But, I love music, so I can talk about it, as you can tell. I can talk about it forever.
Yeah, but, well, being on the radio is fun. You are one of only two people to be on Top of the Pops in each of the 5 decades mm-hmm. that the show's on, you and Cliff
Who
Richard.
Who was the other person?
Cliff Richard.
Oh, yeah.
And in 2000, you got an OBE from the Queen. What exactly is that, and was it important to you?
It's a great honor to be given something like an OBE from, you know, your country, from the Queen. And in fact, it was Prince Charles that gave it to me. Hmm. It doesn't really change your life, but it's just that it's like when I went up to him, he said to me, "This is." This should have happened years ago, and he said to me, "Have you got that? You're going to show me that picture you've got in the attic?" Because he said, you know, people tend to say that I don't look my age, and it's crazy, but they're always so. It was very cute of him to say that to me, because you don't know if you're going to be chatty with them or if they're just going to brush you off and they're going to go next.
Right.
But he was very chatty. But of course, the thrill would have been my parents would have loved it.
Mm.
They would have loved it. It's just honoring the work that you've done, your body of work. And, you know, I think for me it was probably about longevity.
Yeah. Well, your career continues. You've written hit songs for Tina Turner. You've written 2 books. I noticed you've got a MySpace profile. Do you actually check it?
I actually don't do it very much. At the beginning, I used to do it all the time.
But overwhelming.
All the time. I became obsessed with it, but now I'm not so. Yeah, I'm on it, but I don't really. I'm not on it every day. Like you should be if you're going to have one of those.
I agree. Do you have an iPod?
Of course.
And what
I have a Nano.
What do you listen to?
Oh, I love Christina Aguilera. Who else do I like? Right now, I'm actually listening to a new duo. They're not out yet. Called Alex and Britt. They're two young girls that I think are really. They're sort of going to be the queens of the iPod shuffle generation. They're going to be the kids who, I think they're going to just take over. You know, there is nobody who has got a sound like this. So that's something you should listen out for.
Okay.
I like to listen to, I love the Eagles' new album. Who else do I like right now? I like the Kaiser Chiefs. I like a lot of British bands.
So you stay current.
I like, let me think, who else do I really, really, really like? Well, Chris Martin is good. Of course, he's a great writer. And my friend Elton, I always have his albums on.
When you're in the supermarket and a Lulu song comes on, how does that feel?
I don't know. It's weird.
Is it a little weird?
Yes.
Are you a workaholic?
Yeah.
It seems like you are. You were just on American Idol. Mm-hmm. I sort of think the American Idol is sort of ruined singing in a way. It sort of forces folks to put every trick into every song, which is not how my favorite records sound.
Oh, really?
You know,
American Idol's done that? I don't think so. I don't agree with you.
Yeah.
I think it's just the process of recording today. I mean, there's always tricks, but today, technically, it's amazing what you can do in the studio, and I personally am thrilled by it. And I think, you know, people like Missy are a genius. You know, I think she's an absolute genius.
Hmm.
You know, and I think she's not only a good songwriter, but she can make a sound in the studio that's extraordinary.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the technical stuff, but I hear what you're saying. There's nothing, what I think you're saying more, am I right in saying that you like the live sound?
Well, I just think that to win a performance, you have to sort of show off. And so you're concentrating on that instead of what you talked about earlier of getting to know the song and performing the song as what suits the song. This is trying to impress people. And, you know, there's just a little too much, you know, histrionics.
Histrionics. Well, you know
every
what?
Song.
I mean, for me, I like someone who can cut it. Like Van Morrison obviously can cut it. And so, I mean, Sting's voice is unbelievable. I'm talking about in sort of old school, really. But then there are so many young people who have got great voices today. There's a lot of, it's like every generation, there's good and there's not so good.
Yeah.
And I personally like someone who is a great singer. I love a good voice. There's a great rock record. There's a great sound. But also I like a show. I mean, there's nobody better than Prince.
Mm.
You know, and God bless her, Britney Spears used to put on a fantastic show.
I mean,
on stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and she made great records, but I'm not going to say she's my favorite singer.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a difference.
So I like the package. Personally, I like the package, but I am a sucker for a great voice.
Hmm. So what's coming up for you?
Right now I'm just about to sort of start. I'll be 60 this year, so I'm going to have, probably going to be the busiest year I've ever had because I'm going to do a TV special with lots of interesting guests to celebrate my 60th. I'm going to, I have a skin line because I mentioned before people are always sort of crazily telling me, you know, that I look great, I don't look my age. So I've have this skin line and that's a business, a new business that I have. I'm always doing photo shoots, but I've got an album. I've got to do an album for the 60th birthday and do the special, and then I've got a lot of other work. And there's a couple of interesting things in the pipeline for America. So I'm hoping you're going to see a lot more of me over here. Actually,
I can't wait. I hope so.
Yeah, that would be great. And you know, the other thing is that I work with Take That. You know, there's a band called Take That are very big in England, and I had number one with them a couple of years ago. You know, the old Dan Hartman song. Well, you gotta be strong enough to walk on through the night. There's a new day out on the other side. Do you know it? Relight my fire.
And that was a big hit with them.
Yeah, that was number one. Yeah.
And so you're working with them again.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm going to close this out by playing To Sir With Love. It's just such a great song. And I never get tired of it.
Very sweet.
Do you remember the day that you went into the studio and sang it?
To Sir With Love.
Yeah.
Can I remember that day? No, I can't.
Can you make something up real quick?
Make a story up about it.
It was snowing outside. And
Well, I think, you know, it was all very rushed. The thing was very rushed. I didn't have much time to do it. Because at that point, I think I was probably doing my television series. And Mickey always did things very quickly. He didn't spend a lot of time recording. And I think I was very upset that he only had 6 strings.
Mm.
You know, I felt he should have had a 30-piece orchestra because it was for a movie.
Interesting. The string arrangement on this is brilliant. And the sentiment of the song is completely timeless, which I think, you know, really helps songs.
I think the song married with the film was key.
Yeah.
And I think, although I have to say, when I went on American Idol this year, last season, I mean, I said, if I have to sing that song the same way, I think I'll shoot myself. So what I did was I thought it needs a kick to it. It needs to be done differently and needs to work with this big band on American Idol. So I called Barry Manilow, and, you know, Barry did the arrangement for me.
I watched that on YouTube. There's a clip of that, and it's great. Yeah, great version.
Yeah, well, Barry did that arrangement, and I thought it was killer.
Yeah.
I mean, he's an absolute genius. I couldn't believe it. And Elton said, who did that arrangement? He said, was that Barry Manilow? I said, how did you guess? He said, the key change.
Interesting. Well, you and, you know, maybe Elton and Barry Manilow on your new record.
Well, I've worked with Elton lots, and I had Elton will probably do the TV show with me.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun, isn't he?
Yeah, he's great.
Well, I look forward to my invitation to your birthday party.
Oh, right.
In the mail.
Listen, I'm not going to have a birthday party, but I have a show. Maybe you'll come to the show.
That'll be fun. Lulu, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much. And this is really just the tip of the iceberg on your fantastic career.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I've just come off tour. I've been touring for a year with a guy called Jules Holland, who has a big R&B band.
Right.
And in fact, at New Year's, we just did his show on television. And I will do a little tour of my own this year, but I toured for a year with him. So, you know, after Christmas, I was pretty tired.
Take a break.
I am.
Okay. We're going to hear To Sir With Love. Lulu, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Sure, a pleasure.
Bye.